Welcome to my podcast. I'm Jim Savelle, and this is Jim Sports World. Okay, today I want to talk about the previous weekend's NFL action. We'll touch on some college football games that happened over the weekend, and talk about some college basketball. All right, let's start with 41-36. Alright, Seattle over the Saints, right? This game, you look at it going into it, there's a lot of talk about the Saints. Yeah, they shouldn't have to play Seattle on the road. The Saints went 11-5. Seattle's the first team to make the playoffs with a losing record. But Seattle won their division. You strip everything away, the Saints didn't win their division. Seattle did. Regardless of record, Seattle won their division. So I think that squashes that debate, in my opinion. For me, at least, that is in that debate. But going into this game, you look at two teams that have been a lot of up and downs for both teams. The Saints go 11-5, but they really didn't play consistent throughout the entire season. Especially you look at Drew Brees. He throws for the second most yards in his career. He throws for over 4,600 yards. He throws for over 30 touchdowns. But he throws 22 interceptions, the most in his career. Prior to that, he had thrown 18 in 2006, I think it was. But 22, that's the most in his career ever. And that, I think, contributed to a lot of their ups and downs. And his play, as well as the defense's play, especially in this game alone, when you look at it, the Saints defensively just looked unprepared. Seattle comes into this game not having a running back rush for over 100 yards throughout the entire season. They come into this game. Now, granted, the bulk of it came on one run, but Marshawn Lynch ended up with 131 yards rushing. Most of it came off that 67-yard touchdown run near the end of the fourth quarter, which closed it out for Seattle. But their defense didn't know what to expect, and they played right into the hands of Matt Hasselbeck, in my opinion. The way that that game was called, it was a lot of off the wide receivers, they played back a lot, which created a lot of space and allowed Seattle to run a lot of those short dump-off plays, those little screen plays that you saw a lot of, and they were able to turn that short completion into an 8 to 10 yard gain almost every time because of the fact that the Saints were playing off so far. So I think had they played that a little bit differently, things would have worked out in New Orleans' favor. I'm kind of surprised that this happened, but then again, when you look at it, Seattle was dominant at home throughout the regular season, so on the other hand, you're not necessarily surprised, because Seattle has generally been a tough home team. However, this is the first time that they've been to the playoffs since 2007, and they're back into the division round. we'll have to see how they play against Chicago. If Matt Hasselbeck can keep up the brilliance that he displayed on Saturday. I was surprised again that he came in after being much maligned. Like, Matt Hasselbeck, especially throughout this season, wasn't really even the starter all the way through the season. Pete Carroll made this decision based off Matt Hasselbeck's success that he had against the Saints prior, earlier in the season, but he hadn't been playing a whole lot coming into it. So I think that Pete Carroll, well, of course he made the right decision. As you can see, Matt Hasselbeck throws for 4 touchdowns and Seattle wins the football game. But I think definitely it's going to be a different story against Chicago as far as the way the defense is played. So I think you might see more running early in that game from Seattle as opposed to the pass early that essentially the pass to set up the run. Trent Dilfer has been talking about this a lot lately. If you've been listening to his commentary on ESPN, he's been talking about how the teams have, especially this wildcard weekend, have passed early to set up the run. And I would say that is true, where you didn't see, you look at the Ravens-Chiefs game, you didn't see the Ravens having any success early running the ball, but in the second half, after Joe Flacco opened it up a little, they were able to run the ball. And you saw a variety of backs. You saw Ray Rice in the game and Willis McGahee. And Willis McGahee had that 25-yard run in the fourth quarter to show that he still has wheels, getting that touchdown, which ended up putting an already game that was pretty much secured in the bank for Baltimore. Now, one game that I wasn't surprised at all by was the Jets-Colts game. The Jets' defense, kind of up and down this year, sometimes playing well, sometimes getting really just playing beat. I think the Jets' defense still has issues. Revis, especially at the corner side. You look at Revis, and he is, well, he hasn't really done a whole lot in, as far as interceptions and whatnot, but I think that's because quarterbacks have the option to throw the other way, especially you look at Cromartie, and he is the weakest. He is the weak link. You look at just the front 11 in a regular setup package, and you see Cromartie being probably the weakest link. So I think the Jets are going to have to scheme to cover that up. Basically, put Revis on an island, say that he can shut down that wide receiver, and use the rest of your secondary to include your linebackers, and basically set up different coverages that aren't going to put Cromartie in that one-on-one situation and force Tom Brady to wait or to make him look for his third or fourth option and not just have his primary and secondary available to him early in the play. Otherwise, the Jets are going to have a long day on defense. Now, offensively, I think the Jets can have some success against the Patriots. It depends a lot. Everything is going to be on the arm of Mark Sanchez. I think his effectiveness affects everything that happens on that offense. Because if they can't pass well, they aren't going to be able to run well, because they know that if they aren't afraid of the pass, then the Patriots will be able to set up for the run, and that will eliminate that factor. So I think Mark Sanchez probably plays the biggest role of anyone starting in that football game. If Mark Sanchez plays well, doesn't turn it over, and makes plays, then it should be a very good football game. I don't think you're going to see the 45-3 blowout, and I don't think you're going to see the Jets two-touchdown win like you saw in week two. It will be up to the Jets, mostly, to see how that game comes out. Now, the only game that I haven't touched on, you look at the Packers over the Philadelphia Eagles. Michael Vick's first playoff game since he's come back to the league after his absence, and he played brilliant. He, with the exception of the last offensive play of the Philadelphia Eagles season, he did all that he could to make sure that they were going to win that football game. And that's what Michael Vick does. He wins football games. He didn't win this one, but don't be surprised if Philly brings him back next year and they make some noise in the playoffs again. It was an important win for Aaron Rodgers, as he led his team to victory, his first playoff win, especially after last year's loss to the Cardinals, 51-45. So the Packers and Atlanta will face off again, which I think it will probably be the best game we've seen, if not the Steelers-Ravens game. But I think the Packers and the Falcons, it's probably the best storyline out there, because you look at two up-and-coming quarterbacks. Well, not necessarily up-and-coming anymore. They pretty much kind of established themselves in the league, but still that second tier, top of the second tier, best quarterbacks in the league. And Matt Ryan and the Eagles are going to be ready to play. And I think you'll see another close game like it was in Week 12 when Atlanta was able to get the win. I think the big thing there is that Atlanta is at home. If the game was in Green Bay, I would give the edge to Green Bay, but now I think it's almost a toss-up, giving Atlanta's at home and Matt Ryan's success that he's had when playing in the Georgia Dome. And actually, looking at that Jets-Patriots game that we will see next weekend, I was reading a news article on Yahoo Sports. Basically, talked about how Rex Ryan said it was more than just about Jets versus the Patriots. How it was about Ryan versus Belichick. And I think that, to an extent, he's not wrong. You can see I think that's part of the way he works, because to quote Rex Ryan here, he says, "The Jets and the Patriots are evenly matched from the players to the assistant coaches, but Belichick still holds the edge as the coach. He wants to change that starting Sunday and will raise his level against Belichick." And I think that that is Rex's way of trying to take the pressure off of the Jets as a team, because I think that there is a lot of pressure on the Jets. When you look at it, the HBO show they had prior to the season, and all the storylines that going into it, they lost week one, then they come back week two and they beat the Patriots, and it's always that soap opera story week to week with the Jets. Different things happen, Braylon Edwards, and they're always in the news for something. Even Brett Favre, connected to the Jets somehow, brought into the news. So you just see a lot of that, and I think it's Rex's way of just trying to bring the focus to himself and take it off of his players and the pressure off of his players, because I think if the Jets win and Mark Sanchez plays well, this is one of the defining games for the young quarterback's career. For as young as his career is, this is a defining game for him. If he plays well and they lose, well then okay. But if he plays bad and they lose, you're gonna hear about it for the next entire offseason. And it'll be a big focus, especially with the way that blowout went down in Foxborough. You get 45-3. That doesn't happen that often in the NFL, especially against two teams that I agree are evenly matched at certain positions. But I think the Patriots have come a long way on defense. I still think they have a long way to go, given they're still young. We'll have to see how they do. But young players always play better at home than they do on the road. Now I wanted to take a step back, talk a little bit more about the Ravens-Chiefs game. I think the Chiefs throughout the regular season, they played well. But in actuality, when you look at it, they basically made it to the playoffs playing against teams that weren't going anywhere. The Chiefs didn't really have any, I guess, signature wins to their season. Where you go, what? Because when you look at it, they played Indianapolis, who made the playoffs, but they lost that 9-19. They played Seattle, who, yes, they made the playoffs, but Seattle isn't really, although that was an 18-point victory, 42-24. It's a good road win, but still, they didn't play anyone really that had a good season overall. When you look at it, they played the teams in their conference, the Raiders, the Broncos, and the Chargers. Yeah, the Chargers finished 9-7, but they split that matchup and most recently lost them in week 14, 31-0. And they even finished off the season with a 21-point loss to Oakland. And there's a team that I think that shows a lot of promise after this year. Oakland getting to 8-8 after some rough seasons. But Kansas City only played two teams that made the playoffs. So I'm not surprised that going up against one of the top teams in the AFC, in the Baltimore Ravens, that they lost like they did. Baltimore completely shut down that offense. Matt Kessel threw for only 70 yards, and he threw three interceptions. Excuse me. And I think that he has a long way to go as a quarterback. When you look at it, this is only his, really, with all the injuries he's had, or with the injury that he suffered last year, you look at it and he has a long way to go still. But I think that they are finally headed in the right direction after quite a few years of not doing much. Yeah, his first year with Kansas City was not very impressive, but he came in this year, he played very well, and he got them to the playoffs. But I don't think the Chiefs as a whole, I think they're still growing, so I don't think the Chiefs as a whole were ready for this game. Nothing against them, but I just think that they have a long, not necessarily a long way to go, but they have some ground to make. But I think next year, we could possibly see them maybe another 10-5, 10-6, 11-5 season, and they could make some noise in the playoffs possibly. But I think the road still goes through New England and Pittsburgh as far as AFC is concerned. So really, the only game that I am thoroughly surprised by, again, Seattle over New Orleans. I had a sense, I'm not going to say that I called this game, but I had a little bit of a sense. It just didn't seem like the overwhelming favorite that it looked like it should have been. I mean, really, if you look at this game from the other perspective, if Seattle goes into New Orleans, New Orleans wins this game running away. Big blowout win. But the Saints go on the road against a team that they should have beat. And they just don't get it done. So we'll have to see what Seattle can come up with against the Bears. Now, I think that's an interesting matchup, because whenever you're talking about Jay Cutler, you never know really what you're going to get from him. And I think that It's going to be an interesting game, especially when you look at it from the perspective of Jay Cutler, who doesn't always make the best decisions. But I think possibly special teams again could come into effect. I think this will be possibly a low-scoring, close game. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if all four games next weekend were low-scoring, close games. Except for maybe Atlanta-Green Bay. I could see that one being a shootout. Those two quarterbacks. But we'll have to see. At the end of the show, I'll throw out some picks, and we'll see how we do that. Just a side note, this is the first episode of Jim Sports World. I'll be doing a little bit of everything, from NFL to Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL, NCAA, football and basketball, and maybe throw in some international soccer and maybe some tennis. It's all a work in progress on my end, but I think I have some good ideas and maybe some opinions that can maybe spark a debate here or there. Just a little bit of background on myself. This is all done basically in-house. No funding, no anything, all on my MacBook. I have basically standard programs and that I use, and really I'm just looking to get my name out there and see what can happen from there. I'm 21 myself. I live in Augusta, Georgia. I'm a member of the United States Navy. I am a big sports fan, and I feel that I have some different ideas, some different thoughts that maybe I could interject into the sports world and maybe get some recognition here or there. Not really know right now where this could possibly take me, but I think maybe sports talk could be something in my future. But as far as that, yeah, I don't know, we'll see. But yeah, I did want to talk about a little bit of some of the bowl games that happened over the weekend. Pittsburgh, Kentucky. That game, I had a good sense that Pittsburgh was going to win that heading into it. My thought was Pittsburgh, even though they're a Big East team, and I know the Big East takes a lot of flack, they really don't deserve, in my opinion, to have an at-large bid into a BCS bowl. When you look at it, there are just better teams, in my opinion. And I don't think that the Big East should have an automatic bid right now. You know, like, but there's really nothing that can be done about that. But that conference just doesn't stack up as one of the big six anymore. When you look at it, they don't play really top opponents. They're not scheduling teams from the top of the SEC or the top of the Big 12 or even the Pac-10 for that matter. But when you look at a team like Pittsburgh that for the past few years has been one of those grinded out, tough defense, very stiff running game that's going to not always have flashy numbers, but they're going to run the ball a lot and they're going to pound it away at you. And you look at a Kentucky team that really didn't have that great of a season. I mean, 7-5, or excuse me, let me double check that. Here we go, the BBA Compass Bowl. You look at it, and Pittsburgh, I think, was just too tough for him. Like, I think the... the SEC sometimes gets a little too much credit. And especially you look at this bowl season, a lot of ACC teams upset some of the lower SEC teams. And I think that has a lot to do with that sometimes the SEC gets too much credit for being as dominant as they supposedly are. But in my opinion, when you look at it, they produce about two or three, like, really good teams, and then there's semi-okay teams that really beat up on insufficient talented schools. And I think that stems from this notion that actually does hold true in most cases, where the SEC doesn't have to play anyone outside of their conference that is worth playing. Like if I would say a middle of the rung Pac-10 team like Arizona State, if they played the non-conference schedule that the SEC teams played, and then just played the two or three top 15 or top 20 ranked teams that the SEC produces every year. Yeah, well, something like that, right? If they wouldn't be in the top 10 or the top 15 just for... And I think that they... too much weight is put on the conference schedule for the SEC, where in other conferences the weight isn't carried at all, which isn't necessarily fair to those teams, because all you can do is go out there and win every game on your schedule. And now when you look at it, back to my original topic here, the Pittsburgh-Kentucky game. Kentucky without their starting quarterback. But I think Pittsburgh a lot more to play for. Pittsburgh, the players dedicated this game and ultimately the win to their former coach, Dave Wannstedt. I mean, like, yeah, this is only their second win, their second bowl win in their five tries. But I think if you look at the headlines of the Pittsburgh program over the last month, Dave Wannstedt is forced to resign. And then they bring in Mike Haywood, coach of Miami, Ohio. And they let him go because of domestic violence charges that he gets put in jail for. And then they bring in the defensive coordinator, who's the active head coach, who has now since left, as he was hired by Baylor to be their defensive coordinator. And I think that's a testament to Dave Wannstedt. Dave Wannstedt put together a very good coaching staff there. Now, Pittsburgh, it's harder to recruit there. When you look at it, Pittsburgh never really had dominant seasons, especially early and into the middle of the time that Dave Wannstedt was there. West Virginia and Louisville, they were pretty good teams, and Pittsburgh was always kind of in those games. Pittsburgh beating West Virginia actually set up a couple years ago that season finale in which Pittsburgh upset West Virginia, set some different things up for that bowl season. But you see a lot of different things happen, and I think Pittsburgh, they create a lot of opportunities for themselves in this game. You look at that blocked punt. And then Kentucky runs that fake punt in the second half, and that doesn't work. And Tino Sunseri, Pittsburgh's quarterback, throws that touchdown, and there we go. Kentucky went 6-6. Now they finished 6-7 due to a loss. But I think Pittsburgh maybe. Now I don't know what the line was, but I think maybe Kentucky got a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, considering they're an SEC team, but a bottom SEC team, and Pittsburgh is historically just a grinded out, pounded out team, and they showed that in that game. Now I want to move on to the other bowl game that was played this weekend, Nevada and Boston College, where Nevada wins 20-13, which again really wasn't a surprise. You look at Nevada, they get that upset win against Boise State, where Boise State's kicker just can't make a field goal which is the reason why they won that game. But Nevada hung tough. They won that game, and Boston College was able to control the running side of Nevada's offense. They really couldn't get the ball on the ground to go anywhere. So you look at their quarterback, and he makes some plays. And he's able to get them the win. But Nevada's defense, extremely impressed with the way they played. You look at Boston College, 14 for 34 for 121 yards, and they picked him off twice. Very thorough there, and Nevada is a team who had an impressive season. 13-1. They took that one loss in conference play, but when you're playing a team from the ACC that goes 4-4, 7-5 on the regular season. You look at record alone, and you think, wow, Nevada's going to win pretty easily. It was 20-13, generally a low-scoring game, and I think that's due to there's just a talent level that Boston College has, but Nevada, I think, better coached and one of the best teams to come out of a non-automatic qualifying team in a while, or conference, excuse me, non-automatic qualifying conference. Their defense played very well, and it's actually the Nevada's first bowl win in the past 5 years. They had lost 4 straight bowl games. So good job to Nevada there. Now I want to look at the NBA a little bit. You look at this possible trade of Carmelo Anthony. And who knows what's going to happen? Looking at a possible 3-team deal involving the Nets and the Detroit Pistons, and you look at Carmelo Anthony and Chauncey Billups going from the Nuggets to the New Jersey Nets, which I think is kind of interesting, a pair of teammates going to the getting traded to the same team. But I think him going to the Nets would be interesting. But I think he would. I don't know if he would take the long-term deal with New Jersey. I think he would probably accept the trade, but leave New Jersey after this season. Or the trade doesn't happen and Carmelo leaves to the Knicks. Which one is the most likely scenario? It's hard to say at this point. I think Carmelo wants to go to New York. Whether it's to play for the Knicks or the Nets, I don't know if he cares at this point. But if it comes down to it's contingent upon him getting a long-term deal done with the Nets before the trade, or if he has to promise that that is that what will happen. And who knows what players are going to be involved from Detroit's end. It just looks like if Denver pulls off this trade, I think Denver is basically going to start rebuilding. I don't think if Carmelo is trying to win, I don't think that this trade is going to really do anything. The Nets aren't going anywhere. I mean, you look at the standings and they're 10-27. So them having played 37 games, and so you're looking at 45 games remaining. If they win, two of those, which I think is unlikely. Now you're looking at a decent record, but I think they're going to finish below 500 in my opinion. I don't think Chauncey Billups and Carmelo Anthony come into New Jersey and they just start winning a lot of basketball games. There's a lot of good teams, you're looking at Boston, Chicago, Orlando, Miami, Atlanta. So, and the Knicks, we'll just throw those. So there's six teams. I think the Nets maybe finish, say if they go even 28, let's say 28-17, that puts them at 38-44, which could possibly put them into the playoffs. Who knows, really? I just don't know that. I don't think that for Carmelo, it's a smart trade to happen. But I think if he really wants out of Denver that bad, then he doesn't feel like waiting. He can get out now, and then after this season, if he doesn't sign a long-term deal with the Nets, then he can look at other options. But I think he's going to stay in New York, which means if he doesn't stay with the Nets, he'll go to the Knicks, which... And I think then that possibly takes them to that next stage. From, you look at the Knicks right now, they had a very convincing win over San Antonio. But who's to say what that was when you look at the game last night against the Lakers, and the Lakers beat them soundly. So... who really knows what's going on as far as that trade, and if it really can happen. I'll just share this bit of information with you right now. I am currently deployed, sitting in my hotel room right now in Dubai, UAE, United Arab Emirates, and I am starting this podcast probably not at the best time in my life. I won't be able to create another episode for a good month and a half to 2 months, but I will come back, do my own thing, and I'll start fresh. Read up on what things have happened and how things have gone while I was away, and get this thing rolling. But I hope everyone's interested in hearing what I have to say, and maybe we can push this thing to new heights. Well, I think that about wraps it up for me. This has been Jim Sports World. I'm Jim Savelle. Talk to you next time.